because we have extra time, and it's a very interesting case.
No. Well, thank you for getting the time on that.
All righty, the next case of the morning is number 1260401, Anderson versus Macomb, Mississippi. And we'll hear from Mr. Harris first.
May it please the court. I'm Terrence Harris, and I represent Mark Anderson, the appellate in this matter. He's here with us today. Briefly, Mark Anderson is a 25-year employee of the City of Macomb Police Department. In 2009, the City of Macomb was in turmoil in terms of political struggles. As a result of that, Mark Anderson was ultimately arrested and this lawsuit pursued.
Let me ask you a question. I take it he's never been reinstated?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Did he ask for reinstatement?
Yes, Your Honor.
And has he forfeited his pension payments?
Well, no, he hasn't, Your Honor. It's our position that they didn't give him due process in order to challenge their not allowing him to come back.
Right. I understand that. I just wondered what were the consequences if they include. In other words, theoretically, would he still be entitled to his, if he didn't come back, would he be entitled to get his pension, or did he quit too early for that? Or
oh, what? Yes, Your Honor. He can go and work another state of Mississippi job for an extended period of time, and then he will qualify for.
I see.
We're here before the court because the lower court granted summary judgment of the defendants. And as the court is aware, in order to grant summary judgment, there must be no genuine issues of material fact, and the movement must be entitled to judgment as a matter of law. Here, there are no dispute as to what the law is. We agree that a person cannot have a valid Fourth Amendment false arrest claim if the warrant was valid. We agree that's the current state of the law. There's no dispute that if a person who's executed a warrant make material omissions or deliberately misrepresent facts to the judge or the DA, then that can void the warrant. There's no dispute with the law on that issue. There's no dispute with the law that a plaintiff can have a valid 1983 cause of action if he or she doesn't have a protected interest, in this case, a property interest. There's no dispute with the law with that. This case is full of genuine issues of material fact. And when the lower court granted summary judgment, it granted summary judgment based on inadmissible evidence. And the law is clear that evidence to support summary judgment as well as to oppose.
What was inadmissible on the due process issue?
Well, the central issue is whether or not he was an employee. And when they go to the due process issue, the lower court found that since he had resigned, he was not entitled to due process.
Right.
So
you're saying that's the critical issue.
That's the critical issue
in
this case.
Had he resigned or hadn't he resigned?
That's correct, Your Honor. Now, with that...
Who should decide that, a jury, or is that, can you decide, you can't decide that as a matter of law?
That's a question of fact, Your Honor. In fact, there's a case, a Fifth Circuit case, it's an older case, Gardner versus Railroad Retirement Board. It was a 1945 case, so it was the old Fifth Circuit, but the Fifth Circuit said whether there has been a discharge, resignation, or retirement is a question of fact. And the court below invaded the province of the jury by making that determination. Now, it's interesting in that there were only two people privy to the conversation. And that was Mark Anderson and the city clerk, Lahoma Isaac. When Mr. Anderson met with Lahoma Isaac, they had the discussion. He went there to discuss possibilities of retiring. They contacted Mississippi Personnel, Public Employee Retirement System, we refer to as PERS, office.
Is it fair to say that the police chief, Martin, didn't care for Mr. Anderson because he had been the police chief intermittently?
That's very accurate.
And is it fair to say, in your view, that Ms. Isaac was probably a friend of the police chief?
Well, I think Ms. Isaac in this case was the most independent person.
So you're just saying she may have made a mistake in how she interpreted the conversation?
Well, no, Your Honor, that's our point exactly. She did not interpret the conversation as the defendant, well, the city of Macomb said she interpreted. They're basing their interpretation that he resigned based upon a memo that the city administrator asked her to draft.
Right.
Now, she testified in Mr. Anderson's criminal trial that there were three ways in order for a person to separate from the city of Macomb. There was either retirement, resignation, or termination. She testified that he did neither.
Oh, she did?
Yes, ma'am.
I forgot that.
Is the criminal trial, that's the November 10th?
November the 11th, Your Honor.
Is the entire transcript from that trial in the record?
It is, Your Honor. It's at...
Because it ends unusually, correct? The remand to the file?
Yes, Your Honor, it was remanded to the file.
Okay. What's the Mississippi provision that allows a criminal case to end in a remand to a file?
It's tantamount to a dismissal, Your Honor.
Okay. Do you know what Mississippi statutory provision?
I don't know.
Because I read the conclusion right before the closing argument. It doesn't look like the government requests that. It's a dismissal by the judge
yes,
for lack of evidence?
Yeah, basically, I don't know the statute to give you, but when a judge decides to do that, he dismisses the case basically on its merits, and he just remands it to the file.
Okay, but that's with prejudice.
With prejudice.
Your client's been held in jeopardy.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so that ends the criminal trial.
Yes, Your Honor.
But in doing that, he also said, what was his expressions about the arrest facts that he had heard were pretty categorical. You did something very wrong.
Well, Your Honor, I think when you read what the court found, the judge said you should have brought the vehicle back.
Right.
And he also said you got involved, you were brought into something that you should not have been involved in. He referred to the political turmoil that was going on in the city of Macomb at that time. And he referenced that he didn't want to ruin Mark Anderson's career, blemish's career.
And that's all understandable, but if we're taking a zero-in focus as to your first claim on whether there was a false arrest, and we're going to look at his trial transcript as to what the personnel clerk Isaac spoke about, wouldn't one also look to the phrase, the conclusion, the finding of fact, if you call it that, that it was, quote, completely wrong to take the vehicle? Isn't that implicitly saying the affidavit saying joyriding, impersonating isn't a false statement to the municipal judge that gave the warrant?
Well, yes, that's true, Your Honor. But also with that, there were material omissions to obtain the warrant.
Well, and you've put those forward, and it does look like these various hearings, especially in front of when the mayor speaks to the full board, would have put into question whether he'd retired or not. And I think that's what you're focusing on. But what about the legal conclusion that a Mississippi court has said that the chief doesn't have authority to unretire or retire legally? So whatever the chief thought really had no legal effect?
Well, it does, Your Honor, in that what he thought, if it was reasonable, and that's a question of fact, that there's evidence in the record where Chief Martin attended the board meeting in which it was announced that Mr. Anderson was returning.
They were both at the board meeting. They were both at all the public meetings, weren't they?
Well, Mr. Anderson was at the board meeting, I think, on the 14th, but he does not recall being at a work session meeting.
If a prerequisite to retiring is you have to turn in your statement of, you know, length of service and Social Security, birth certificate and some other, you have to file a written statement if you're going to retire, right?
Right.
And he hadn't filed that. What would happen to that statement ordinarily? Where would it go? Would the chief have to see it?
Well, the city clerk who takes it would either send it to his department head, which would be the chief, and the city administrator and or mayor. And then they would have to fill out part two of the PERS application, and then that would be sent to the state Mississippi retirement system.
So the chief would have to know about that because obviously he's the one who's going to fill a vacancy.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And at the time that both at the time that Mr. Anderson returned and when he didn't get any kind of hearing, he hadn't filled out that paperwork.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And so you're saying there's a genuine dispute issue. In fact, he also, I think you agree in the brief, he hadn't filled out any leave request paperwork. So sort of, again, the record's a little bit equivocal, which I think you say gets you to a trial. But until the arrest occurs, I don't think the record reflects there'd been any paperwork filled out to take leave, but there also hadn't been any paperwork filled out to process a retirement.
That's correct, Your Honor. But the record reflects that Mrs. Isaac, the city clerk, contacted Mr. Lockley, the administrator, and Mr. Lockley approved the leave that Mr. Anderson took on August the 28th, 29th, and 30th.
Really?
Yes, that's in the record.
Lockley approved leave? I'm sorry, go ahead.
864 in the record.
That's Lockley approving leave while still employed?
For Mr. Anderson, yes.
Okay.
And to go back to your question with regards to the legal conclusion, when the case was remanded to the file, the court found that he was not convicted of it. So that tells us that one or two things. It had no merits, or there wasn't sufficient probable cause. Now, I mentioned earlier that there were material omissions.
Well, there would be no conclusion that there wasn't sufficient probable cause because that would have been a pretrial motion you'd file, right?
Yes.
If he went to trial on impersonating or joyriding, the Mississippi offenses, again, it's whatever this remand to a file means, but it wouldn't be a finding of lack of probable cause for the original warrant.
Well, that's correct. There were no merits to the case. Now, and I want to point to the material omission because that's a standard, one of the ways to invalidate a warrant, which gets us to our false arrest. As I said, they were at the board meeting when it was announced that he was returning on the 16th. In fact, the video showed where they applauded. There was testimony where they actually applauded, they meaning the chief of police as well as the administrator Lockley. They applauded him returning. On the day he was arrested, Chief Martin had a dispatch call that an unauthorized employee was in a vehicle. He referred to him as an employee. And in his deposition, Chief Martin testified to a policy 6.313, which says when an employee is no longer coming back to work, but he's on leave in order to process his retirement, he's still considered an employee because he's continuing to get paid. That's record page 539. So here, there are a plethora of genuine issues of material fact. Again, they're basing that Mr. Anderson resigned based on a memo that Ms. Isaac drafted at the request of the administrator Lockley several days after Mr. Anderson met with Ms. Isaac. Now, that's important because neither Mr. Lockley nor the Chief Martin were privy to that. They're basing their interpretation. It's inadmissible for summary judgment because it's not admissible at court. That would clearly be hearsay. They're saying that Chief Martin told Ms. Isaac told Mr. Lockley told Chief Martin. That's clearly admissible. And then if you go to inadmissible.
Did the chief refuse to process the take leave request prior to the arrest?
After the arrest.
Before the arrest, after the board meeting on the 8th, I thought the record reflected that he said to the chief, here are my papers to take leave while I'm employed, and the chief said, I won't process that.
Well, that's correct. The chief and Mr. Lockley refused to do it, saying that we took you terminated yourself, you resigned on August the 27th,
yeah.
When Mr. Lockley had clearly
Thank you. You have time for rebuttal, Mr. Harris.
Thank you.
Mr. Harvey.
May it please the court, Brett Harvey for the appellees. In summary judgment cases like this, very often what the plaintiff attempts to do is to throw enough doubt into the record in order to get to trial. That's the basic idea, and I would congratulate them. They've done a lot to sort of obfuscate what the record really says. But I want to take a minute to address a few of the things that were said in oral argument, because obviously we didn't get the benefit of a reply brief to be able to prepare for these. First of all, Judge Jones, you asked whether or not the appellant, Mr. Anderson, asked for reinstatement. The answer to that is the only time that occurred was at the September 8th board meeting, in which the mayor indirectly stated that Mr. Anderson would be returning, and the response by the board was fine. At the September 14th work session, they decided to put on the calendar for the very next meeting, the September 22nd meeting, a docket item to determine whether he would be reinstated. So their answer to that was fine. Now, if the implication of the question was, after all this happened, after the 16th, after the 22nd, did he ever request reinstatement after that? The answer was given by the district court in footnote 13 on page 1194 of the record, which says that the plaintiff, who had the burden, never put anything in the record about what happened after the 22nd. As to whether or not he requested reinstatement after that, as to whether or not he requested benefits after that, that's what the district court was told, and the plaintiff having the burden simply didn't make that record. It just didn't happen. So if that's the thrust of the question, I wanted to make that clear. Next, the appellant says that there was inadmissible evidence in the record. The first thing I'd note is there's not one word about inadmissibility anywhere in the trial court briefs or anywhere in the appellate briefs, so we would contend that any argument about inadmissible evidence would be waived at this point. Secondly, it's not inadmissible. I think the thrust of the argument that Mr. Anderson is making is that somehow Chief Martin relied on word from other people to determine whether or not Mr. Anderson was still employed. If Chief Martin were to get up and say, someone with authority in the city who knows about, you know, personnel policies told me someone wasn't employed, he wouldn't be citing that necessarily for the truth of the matter. He would be citing it because he had a reasonable basis to believe it. He would simply be saying it for the fact that it occurred. And what happened here, let's just go through the record to be clear about why there was probable cause. It would benefit us, I think, to sort of walk through what happened. It's undisputed, and we have the memorandum, however much they doubt the veracity of it. If you look at page 683 of the record, you have the memorandum from Lahoma Isaac to Cordenia Lockley, and then Lockley in turn has a memorandum to Chief Martin saying, Mr. Anderson is retired. He is no longer with the city.
That's absurd. I'm sorry, but...
Why is that?
I think she would... Well, it certainly conflicts with what Mr. Anderson said, but he can't be retired until he's done all the paperwork.
And that's incorrect. And I would say that's incorrect, Your Honor. And that's another point they've done a good job of obfuscating.
Now, I know you say that when you declare your intention to retire, you're, you know, according to some Eighth Circuit case, that's the case. But we're talking about a tiny little town.
And I will talk about the tiny little town.
And a man who's, right. You know, a lot of retirement benefits depending on getting the paperwork straight and so on.
Right. And the record says very, very clearly, and I'll point you to the page in the record as to what the town's, you're talking about the PERS policies. And we agree with you. If you want to get benefits from a state agency, you do have to fill out paperwork. But you don't have to get benefits from a state agency to end your employment with the city of Macomb. And that's the material question. They're two different things, right? And the policy.
And a civil service career, you could just go in and talk to a human resources person and
say, and this is
let me finish my question. You can say, I'm contemplating retirement. How much leave do I have? And then that can get reflected in a memorandum that says they are retiring. And as a result of that, it's irrevocable unless the board reinstates you?
No, Your Honor. We're talking about a Section 1983 case here in which you have to establish that the wrong was caused by a policy of the city. I agree with you.
Well,
if you were the if
well,
you
Well, the chief is the policymaker here. He's the hire and fire person, is he not?
No, he's not. That's the Board of Selectmen.
So the chief can't hire the policeman?
No, the Board of Selectmen does.
Only the Board of Selectmen hires all the policemen?
Correct.
Okay.
So he's not the hire and firing person. He doesn't make the decision to begin or end employment. I'll read you the policy on separation from the city of Macomb for civil service employees.
Well, then employees. How come, so he could swear out, but he made the conclusion that the man had retired because that's how he swore out an arrest warrant.
Because at the September 4th board meeting, work session, he was specifically told by the Board of Supervisors, and they are the policymaker, that's undisputed in the record. The chief was specifically, they specifically said, we have concluded that you are not an employee. You will have to be reinstated on the 22nd. Now, I agree, if you were the PERS board for the state of Mississippi, there might be an issue there. But under a Section 1983 claim, where you have to have the policymaker make the decision, here's what the chief knew. He knew he had received a memorandum from people who handle the personnel issues. He is not the personnel person. He knew that the mayor had made some statements, but he also knew correctly that the mayor has no legal authority to change personnel policies. And then he knew that on September 14th at the work session, the board had said, we will consider whether you return and are reinstated, and that's in the record. It's written down on the minutes.
And Mr. Anderson was present at that meeting?
He was present at the meeting, and he knew. Okay, and I can go even further, Your Honor. I just want to make sure this is perfectly clear. Then, on September 16th, when all this was happening, the chief didn't run willy-nilly and swear out an affidavit. The first thing he did was he got a dispatcher to say, you're not authorized to have this vehicle. And by the way, Your Honor, I would point out, under the joyriding statute, which I believe is I can't recall the citation.
Charges were dismissed. I'm not really too concerned about the arrest allegation.
Fair enough. On the false arrest claim, just briefly, if the panel has any interest in it at all, we'd point out that the dispatcher instructed him to return, and Mr. Anderson admitted he understood that was an instruction for him to return. He admitted he heard it. Then an officer confronted him and told him he wasn't authorized to have the car and was instructed to bring it back again, and he didn't. At that point, still, the chief did not go and swear out the affidavit. He consulted with the city attorney, he consulted with the city administrator and the district attorney, people who know more about the personnel policies of the city of Macomb than he does, and they told him he is not an employee. And on the basis of those statements, he said that there is that he's not an employee.
Where in the record specifically does it say the district attorney, what you just said, the district attorney told Chief Martin that Anderson is not an employee?
Chief Martin has a statement that he made after this occurred. It's in the record. I don't have the site, but I'd be happy to provide it if the court would invite it.
Martin will say in this record that he was told by the district attorney that Anderson is no longer an employee.
Your Honor, I don't have a photographic recollection of the entire record. I believe that. I know that he said he conferred with the district attorney.
Well, that everyone agreed in the briefs.
And on the basis of that conferring with the district attorney and the city attorney and the city administrator, he confirmed based on their advice that he was not an employee. I cannot recall, but it's in the record.
So you're saying Macomb's got these unique rules. Would you agree that the Eighth Circuit decision that Judge Jones just mentioned is completely different factually? In that case, I think the individual in question had written a letter saying, I resign. And that then had been accepted by a vote and a vacancy had been announced.
For purposes of Section 1983, I would say it's not.
Okay, well, when you say for purposes of 1983, do you mean that they haven't made a showing of municipal liability?
Right.
Or do you mean that this record is indisputable that he resign?
If you will look at the position he took in the district court, page 816 of the record, what his summary judgment brief, by the way, Your Honors, is 7 pages long with only 3.5 pages of argument. So generally, I would counsel the court that there may be a lot of waiver in here.
What's the site you were going to give us?
816.
And what does it say there?
It says, I told Lahoma Isaac that I intended to retire. That's what it says in his brief to the trial court.
But then when you look at the record, page 1095, he's exactly right that he said, I told Lahoma Isaac that I am contemplating retirement.
But what he said in his brief to the district court was that he said, I intend to
and
retire.
And the district court's conclusion is, therefore, there's an inconsistency. It's not that there's no genuine issue of fact. That's not disputed.
And may I just loop that back quickly to the point about the board? Ultimately, to have a due process violation, and this goes to the Moore versus Dallas Independent School District case, let's say Lahoma Isaac made a mistake. In fact, let's even assume that she was malicious about this and she misreported it on purpose, okay? If she misreported it to the board and the board had no reason to believe this was anything other than a retirement, and that's what the record says, there is nothing in the record to suggest that the board had any reason to believe that this was anything but a retirement. If that's the case, they are the policymaker. No one disputes that they're the policymaker for personnel choices. If they believe that he had simply retired and they treated it as a retirement and never voted to terminate him, which, by the way, he pleads that in his complaint, that they never voted to terminate him, then they have never made a policy. They have never enacted a policy of wrongfully terminating someone without due process. What happened here, at most, was a mistake or perhaps even a malicious act by a subordinate employer, and the Dallas Independent School District case says that when that happens, it's not a policy of the board. Now, I want to add to that that there are mechanisms that this court has. For example, when a subordinate employee does things wrong and the policymaker like the board has failed to take action to remedy it, there are things like failure to train cases. But in failure to train cases, you have to show a reckless disregard for a known risk.
This is two possibilities. This is either Chief Martin working to rule and, you know, taking advantage of what he saw as a gap in Anderson's conduct in order to declare him non-employed, even though the mayor had said, you know, even though he had reneged on his decision to retire. The man didn't have to retire,
but
right?
He didn't declare him non-employed, Your Honor. That's what the board said on September 14th.
He didn't what?
He didn't declare him non-employed. That's what the board said during the work session on September 14th.
But he did declare him non-employed for purposes of joyriding.
Right, based on what the board had said on the 14th, what the city attorney said.
But then the board, you're saying the board could have been malicious or they could have been mistaken.
No, Your Honor, that's not what I was saying. I was saying that a subordinate employee could have been malicious or mistaken. But as long as the board believed and had no reason to think that it was anything other than a retirement, they are not liable under Section 1983.
Where's the evidence in the record about the board?
Their burden is to show that the board thought that this was something other than a retirement, but we'll show you.
You moved for summary judgment.
But they have to establish a genuine question of material fact. And in order to establish, they have to, in other words, this court has been very clear that it is the burden of the plaintiff to establish a municipal policy of practice. The only possible municipal policy of practice in this case would be an action by the board when they believed it was something other than a retirement. They have not pointed to any evidence that
you're asserting what they believed. And it seems to me you have to have evidence that shows that they weren't just, I mean, on the face of it, it could look like a denial of process.
Well, okay, the evidence is that Cordenia, and I don't have the record site on this, I'd be happy to submit it if the court would invite it, but Cordenia Lockley specifically said, I was at the meeting on September 14th, and they asked me what to do about Anderson, because there was some ambiguity after the mayor spoke as to what his position was, which indicates that, and you couple that with the fact that there is absolutely nothing in the record to indicate that anyone on the board was told that this was anything other than a retirement,
Was the board present on September 8th when the mayor stated that Anderson had reconsidered?
Yes, and that's a political statement
board was there.
Sure.
It's your interpretation that it's a quote political statement, but it sounds like a statement of fact.
There's nothing in the record that says the mayor got up and said he didn't intend to retire at all. As a matter of fact, if you read a footnote in the district court's opinion, what he says is he wishes to unretire. That's
the
statement
that
he made. Well, if he unretires, that means he's retired.
Why doesn't the jury decide what that means?
If he says unretire, that means he's retired.
The district court said he said unretire, and then two sentences later he says, wait a minute, I meant to take the lead. So even that district court footnote is not stating it was a clear unretired.
But even if the mayor unambiguously stood up and said, I believe that he didn't mean to retire and that he did not, in fact, state his retirement, the city has the right to rely on its subordinate employees. Unless there is some, if the city cannot be liable under Section 1983 because it says, well, you know what? Our personnel person told us that this was, in fact, not a retirement.
I think I'm really having a problem with your talking about this not being a policy decision simply because all the actors in this comedy or tragedy, whatever, tragicomedy, were present at every significant public gathering.
That's fine. But they never.
So that means the board, you can't impute the misdeeds or errors of a subordinate to the board members who are there when it's very plain that the mayor is saying that Anderson's reconsidering.
They were not present during the meeting on August 27th when this conversation happened.
On September 8th,
the mayor stated his opinion. Let's assume, and I don't think the record supports this,
well,
but let's assume.
Well, I didn't take your brief to be, parsing what the mayor had said.
And that's a fair point. Let's assume, as I say, Your Honor, let's assume that the mayor said in no unambiguous terms, he did not mean to retire. I don't consider him retired. What you have on the one hand is the mayor making that statement when he was not there, and Cordelia Lockley making the statement in her memorandum.
The mayor had talked to Anderson about this.
That's fine.
Tried to discourage him from retiring.
And that's fine. But again, the board has a right to rely on its subordinate employees. It's not actionable for the board to say.
And the board can't be, but doesn't a jury have a right to consider what the mayor, who's a superior to the subordinate employees, has also said?
Why would it? I mean, if the board.
Why? Because he's the mayor.
Because he has absolutely no, and under the special charter system, he has absolutely no power over personnel decisions. The board has, it's not a matter of what the mayor thinks, Your Honor. It's a matter of what the board had a right to rely on.
Does the record reflect as clearly as they say that the board then itself applauded the statement?
No, that's not in the record. That's here. The video, as far as I know, is not in the record. And again, even if they had applauded, they had a right to go back and make that decision on September the 22nd in the manner that they set forward, which is they said, we'll have a hearing on reinstating him on September 22nd. You know, it might be that they're simply
It's very fact specific. So what is your records proposition that they said, we will have a hearing on reinstatement? You infer from that they had conclusively felt that he retired, but now he was asking for reinstatement. I thought the record was much more gray, that their statement was, well, that'll be an issue for possible reinstatement. It wasn't a conclusion by the board that he had retired.
Your Honor, I'm not sure. Regardless of whether the board was ambiguous or certain, the question is whether or not they ever terminated him without due process, and the answer is no. They never terminated him without due process.
Well, he was excluded from his workplace. I thought his machine, when he tried to arrive on the 27th, didn't work, not the 27th.
Right, but for purposes of due process, he was given a date certain when he could come before the board and ask for reinstatement. The board never terminated him. And by the way,
to my request for your record, what's your best record site for this conclusive board action saying apply for reinstatement or we will consider?
Oh, I see. Okay, I see. Thank you for clarifying. And there are more places in the record where this is discussed in the testimony from the trial. I apologize, I don't have them. But if you will look at page 735 of the record, you'll see this is the work session minutes in which it says Mark Anderson resignation placed on agenda 92-09.
Resignation placed on?
Mark Anderson resignation placed on agenda 92-09.
Well, he never resigned.
And again, Your Honor, that may be an instance of slightly imprecise language.
So if that's imprecise, what the mayor said is irrelevant, and what Ms. Loxley said has got to be God's own truth.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what the truth is, Your Honor. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who's right and who's wrong. If the board, if you disagree that the board has a right to rely on its subordinate employees, and we get into like a super personnel board situation, I don't have anything else to argue.
Mr. Harvey, I am not saying that the board doesn't have a, quote, right to rely, but I am saying that while they may rely on Ms. Loxley, they also need to take into account a contrary statement by the mayor.
But who decides that? Do they decide it, or does a court decide it? They should be able to decide who they rely on, and it shouldn't be actionable under Section 1983.
Excuse me, and don't interrupt me, and I'll try not to interrupt you. A jury might decide it, is what I'm suggesting.
I don't know of any law under Section 1983 that suggests that a policymaker, a board, doesn't have a right to rely on its subordinate employees. You and I might disagree and a jury might disagree, but the question is, if the board had a good faith reason to believe that this was a retirement and then never voted to terminate, and that's undisputed in the record, they haven't they have not enacted a policy or custom for purposes of Section 1983 to deny him due process.
It's Kropotnick that says that when the policymaker makes a decision, that's the policy.
And the policy was you get a hearing on September 22nd. That's the only policy they ever made.
Although that's considered a resignation.
What's that?
Nothing to suggest a resignation occurred here.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I don't.
That, as you just quoted, that was set to consider a resignation.
And no, it's considered reinstatement.
Reinstatement after resignation. That's what you just read to me, the board agenda.
And that means they concluded that he had either resigned or retired.
But either resigned or retired, if that's that imperfect, it's his contention he was discharged. Resigned or retired has huge significance.
Why?
What in the record shows any paperwork processed prior to the arrest?
It's not
either. And let me finish my question. Either in the direction of resignation or retirement.
It's not required.
Anything in the record?
What have they pointed to show?
I'm asking you a question. Is there anything in the record since August 27, before he's arrested, that shows processing of any retirement or resignation? Yes or no?
I don't know of any. And my response to that, Your Honor, would be that if you look at page 688 of the record, it's very clear that their policy is you can come in and say, I resign, and that will be effective. Now, as I said earlier, there is paperwork to get the benefits from the state agency, but that's a totally different thing. There's nothing.
Do you agree with the statement to you that in fact, Ms. Isaacs qualified?
What's that?
Do you agree? The only two people present on August 27th was Isaac and Anderson.
Correct.
Okay. And do you agree with the statement made by your opposing counsel earlier that Isaac, in the criminal trial, which is in the record, did then clarify that she didn't perceive clearly?
No, Your Honor. I don't agree with that. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Harvey. Mr. Harris?
A couple things. Your Honor, first, Your Honor, when we talked about probable cause earlier, this was a municipal court hearing, so there is no preliminary hearing to establish probable cause. So I just wanted to
thank you.
Clear.
I appreciate it. It would help me if you jumped right to his point. Rely on municipal liability law, and if the policymaker here is the board. What disputed issue of fact is that they had a policy or custom that was the moving force?
Well, Your Honor, a single act by an official can constitute policy for 1983 liability.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be, we don't have to show a written policy and they have a custom of practice. We can show a single official act. And in this case, that act would be denying him his due process. And as Judge Jones indicated, at every meeting, the board were there, the board of selectmen and the mayor, as well as the police chief, as well as the city administrator.
Do you accept his premise that we've got to focus on the board as the policymaker here? And if so, what in the record implies that they thought they had done anything other than accept a resignation or a retirement?
Well, Your Honor, if you go to the mayor, Mayor Patterson's testimony in the criminal trial, record page 952 and 953, he said, referring to the meeting, I pointed an agenda item that they were going to vote on at that meeting to accept his retirement. That's on 952. Then at 953, he testified, I made it known that it would be unnecessary to vote on the retirement of what Mark Anderson, because he decided not to retire. So we never did it to the agenda item to vote on his retirement.
I could see how that implies the opposite. He decided not to retire. Wouldn't that suggest that maybe when he walked in with Isaac, he said, I am going to retire, and then on his own, he mulled it and thought, I've talked to Mayor Patterson, I think I want to go back. But at that point, they would be proper to have accepted the retirement, and if the only mechanism is to seek reinstatement, then the chief may not like that, but he wouldn't have any legal authority to tell the board that they can do anything but formally reinstate him.
Well, if you go back to what he said, though, both Ms. Isaac and the chief both said that
he said he was thinking of retiring. He was contemplating retirement. He said, well, Ms. Isaac clearly testified.
It doesn't matter. It's for a jury, isn't it?
I think it's an issue of fact, Your Honor. Ms. Isaac testified in the criminal case below that Anderson was given the required paperwork and was told to bring it back in order to retire, record 855. She said Anderson never brought the required paperwork back, record 865. And importantly, on record 867, she said as of that day, November the 11th, 2009, there was nothing to indicate that Anderson had separated from the Macomb Police Department. Again, they look at this memo that was Mr. Lockley asked her to draft and trying to interpret it as his resignation. He didn't draft that. That's something that she drafted at the request of Mr. Lockley. And again, that's all is inadmissible hearsay testimony. That memo, in theory, you may argue, well, it may be a business record. But it's not a business record because she testified in the criminal trial that it was uncommon for people to retire verbally. She also said that it wasn't kept, that memo wasn't kept. It was uncommon and it wasn't something that she normally did. So it's not a memo that would be kept in the ordinary course of business. So it doesn't qualify under a hearsay exception. But anyway, that their whole case is based upon an interpretation of what Mr. Anderson said to Ms. Isaac, and Ms. Isaac and Mr. Anderson say the exact same thing, that he never resigned, he never retired, and he was never terminated. They say the exact same thing. Rather, they rely upon an interpretation.
Does the record reflect whether he was paid for those intervening weeks? Was he paid as taking leave while employed?
He was not paid, Your Honor. Although Mr. Lockley approved his leave.
Normally, with somebody, I take it that this whole thing starts off with the idea that if a city employee has accrued leave, that they're able to basically take a vacation while still on the payroll before they formally retire, right?
That's correct.
Using up accrued leave that he accrued, but he's still on the payroll.
That's correct, Your Honor. And that's referenced in their city policy 6.313, in which Chief Martin testified to. And he would have taken his 30 days, and he had 10 and a half months accrued leave. After his 30 days, he would have had sufficient 25 years in.
No rational officer would just waste 10 and a half days, 10 and a half months of accrued leave before he retired, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for your time.